It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 560 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's a special crowdfunding doubleheader, and it all kicks off with Christopher Michael. He's got a Kickstarter underway that will conclude on November 11th for his book Crit. And it's described this way. Based on a D&D campaign, Crit is a modern fantasy adventure that reads like an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia meets TMNT, the Turtles. We discuss how the comic came to be and his role in it, which is a very interesting thing to me, and what else Chris is up to. Then everything wraps up with the return of George McHale from the Great Cover of Darkness series. And he's offering a hardcover edition and a new card game in his Kickstarter going on right now. We discuss the series and how the card game came to be, and it's always a fun discussion when I talk with George, so be sure to support his excellent horror comics. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Christopher Michael from Crit, which is Covert Reconnaissance Infiltration Team, which has a Kickstarter going right now for this issue number 6, which is actually the 7th issue. Wow, that's a lot to have completed. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. I got to congratulate you on several things. Number one, to get all these issues done by now, that's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of work, but I have some really good support and, you know, with my team and my family, and we've done quite well with, you know, with the Kickstarters and getting all the backers. So they keep it going, and, you know, the feedback I've gotten is great. So I try to continue that momentum and keeping everybody with new content fresh and out the door.
People get mad at me because I don't say this fast enough. So let me go ahead and say it. You've got a Kickstarter for Crit Caffeinated Chaos, a D&D adventure story, and all or nothing, this project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Friday, November 11, 2022 at 8:16 p.m. Eastern Time. Mm-hmm. EST should be ED. I guess, it'll be Eastern EST. Will it by then? I guess it will, yeah. That's good. Congratulations are in order as well, because as we're speaking, you have met your goal of $1,500. In fact, as we're talking, you're double that. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we just hit the double mark today. Really, really proud of that as well, because a lot of the people that came in the first day or two to back the campaign were repeat backers. So, you know, we have a good fan base. I got to thank every single one of them for coming back for more and more and making the project successful with it. We funded within 15 minutes, and within about 2 hours, we hit just over $2,000. And then, we just broke three. So just chugging along. I got a post today that we unlocked the first stretch goal. So everyone gets a digital indie comic bundle. I'll put that together here tonight and announce that. And then we'll be moving on to the next stretch goal, which I'm going to put a poll up on my account on Instagram to see if people want collector cards or stickers. We'll do one of those two.
Okay. Is the next book called Caffeinated Chaos? Is that why that's in there?
Yeah, it's like the title of the issue.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So that has to do with coffee or Coca-Cola or something like that when we get there.
Yeah, in the story, they make their own coffee shop and their own energy drink brand. So the caffeine was prominent, and it's D&D, so there's tons of chaos. So Caffeinated chaos seemed fitting.
Okay, let me go ahead and read a little bit from the Kickstarter so people know. Crit is a modern fantasy comic based on a Dungeons & Dragons homebrew game. It's an action-adventure series that centers on a group of friends who gain abilities after an accident at work puts them on a quest to save the world from an ancient evil force. series follows the team as they uncover the source of their abilities, face challenges, and grapple with choices that test whether or not they can truly call themselves heroes. So it's pretty good. And I mentioned what the letters stand for already. Now, I'm kind of interested. Do you want to talk a little bit about who the characters are? Are these all from that game, or are these some of these from the game and some of them are ones you came up with? How did this come to be?
Everything you read happens in the game. Nothing comes after it. There might be some editing done, some polish on it, because it is a D&D game. So it's tough to be able to put that into an organized flow sometimes, just because of the nature of D&D. But with the characters and everything in it, they all exist in game. There's nothing that I make afterward.
Okay. Do you want to go down who the characters are?
Yeah. So we have Caliber. He is your gun guy. He's a sharpshooter, but he also his power is the ability to be immune to powers. So if someone hits him with, say, a fireball, he's completely immune to it. And he's like the wisecracking, gun-toting guy. He's trained in 7 different forms of martial arts, which the guy who plays him in the game actually is in real life, trained in 7 different forms of martial arts. Every character is based off of who they are in real life. So it adds some depth to each character. Boulder is his personality. The easiest way to sum him up is if Eddie Murphy became All Might, and that's exactly how Terrell said he wanted his character to be when he created him. In real life, Terrell is an Olympic level wrestler. So he knows quite a bit about grappling and things, and he plays Boulder very well as far as being the punching guy, grappling guy. He's your ground and pound, strong guy. He's short, so that's an ongoing joke for him, because he's like the smallest guy in the group. But he looks at all the big tough enemies, and he's always like, "I thought you'd be bigger." And then you've got Reach, who is the resident tech expert. His ability allows him to communicate with any kind of technology that he can touch. So if he can touch a robot, he can reprogram a robot. If he's near a computer, he can communicate with that computer, hack into it, and he builds all the fun stuff for them, upgrades their armor. He's the tech guy. Then you've got Spectre, who is like a warlock wizard class, and he has a group of familiars that he can choose from. So kind of like Pokemon. He has a cat, he has an owl, and he has a chameleon. We just introduced the owl and the chameleon in the book. They just showed up because he just unlocked them in the game. So we've seen a lot of the cat so far, Sameti, but now we have talking owl and a talking chameleon to go along with it that give him different flavors of magical abilities from different magic trees like Bard and Wizard. And so he has quite a bit. His character is unique in that way, that he can kind of change his power set at will. And then we've got Bones, who is a tank. He's like a 7-foot tall guy. His power allows him to call upon like a magical sword and shield. And he just he's the guy that tanks all the damage for the party. That's our main cast of characters. There's a bunch of NPCs that show up throughout the story. I play most of those. So they're innocent bystanders to experience all of their fun, chaotic antics.
Okay. If I heard you correctly, these characters are based on your friends.
Yes.
Okay. That is the David Peterson. I don't know if you know who David Peterson is. He does Mouse Guard.
No, I have not heard of him before.
Okay. Mouse Guard is a fantasy story about a bunch of mice who can, who are swords, kind of thing. It's very fantasy oriented. They stand up on their, as if mice could stand up on their feet. They go around with swords and all kinds of stuff. And he was the first one I ever interviewed for this podcast many years ago, about 10 years ago. And the thing that got me was I asked him, because I was thinking, based on the characters and stuff like that, that they were based out of characters from King Arthur's story or the Knights of the Round Table. And I asked Dave, I said, is that where the characters come from? And he says, oh, no, they're my friends. And I went, oh. He says, I know my friends. I can tell what they're going to do, so it's easy to write them. Mm-hmm. Have you found that to be the case? Is it easier to, because you guys know each other, that you can do these kinds of characters and you can base them on real people, makes it a little easier to write?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, I don't really write it. I record the game sessions and then take everything they do in the game and put it into the comic. So really, even what they say, 90% of that comes out of their mouth. I might make a few adjustments, but knowing them, knowing their personalities, it does help a lot, because when I'm actually bringing the story to life and drawing them, I know how my friends stand. I know how they talk, you know, if they use certain hand gestures a lot. It allows me to really bring the character to life in a way that it would be tough for somebody else to be able to, say, build a character, because you would have to build their personality in your head. How do they react? What are key things that they might say? Because as individuals, when I meet someone, I look for their uniqueness. And I've been around my friends long enough to pick up on this. And I know when I'm carrying on a conversation with, say, Terrell, for instance, we were roommates for a long time. He has a lot of things that he'll say all the time, like his normal responses. And it makes it really easy for me to, when I'm directing the flow and listen to the dialogue, I know what he would say in that situation. So if I have to adjust something, I already know how he would react, and I can make it, organic in a way. Whereas if I was writing a character, maybe I wouldn't have that key phrase that he says all the time. Or maybe I wouldn't know how he stands, you know, because Terrell always stands very straight backed, very crosses his arms a lot. He has certain tics to him that I know just from being around him for 15 years. So it does make it a lot easier. Yes.
Wow. I have to say, in all my years of interviewing people, this is the first time that I've ever come across a comic that is actually literally a game put down on paper. I think that if people have done that before, I've never heard it. So I'm fascinated by that. How long have you guys been playing the game? Or is the issue zero? Is that the first time you guys ever played the game?
That was the first session of this game. We've been playing D&D together for going on 15 years. But yeah, that was the first session was that one.
Wow, I'm fascinated, because I literally have never come across this before. So how long does it take for you to play the game and then to transcribe it into a comic?
So the game sessions are about 4 to 6 hours. It takes me about a week to listen to everything again. Once I'm done listening to the game, and I get, so during that week, you know, everything I'm doing, whether I'm driving, drawing, sometimes playing video games, at the gym, whatever I'm doing, I'm listening to our game session over and over and over again. So I can get a feel of what that moment in time was, and I can remember the flow of everything in there. And while I'm listening, I listen for things that stuck out in game that we said, that's got to make it in the book. Because there's always like those moments in every game where we're like, oh man, that's got to go in the book. And I listen for things that, how do I want to see this play out? Because it is D&D, so a lot of the action happens in our mind. So I set the stage, but our brains do all the fun stuff. And so how do I bring this to life in a way that portrays it the way I see it and the way my friends were able to experience it to give the reader that same experience that we had at the table. And I'll make a lot of notes, like this moment has to be there. This is the way this needs to flow. Okay, this one small thing doesn't really matter, right? Like there's things that happen at the table just for us to have fun that have no impact on the story and really wouldn't, they would more, you know, distract the reader than guide the reader. So when we started this project, we decided if it didn't need to be told, we're not going to tell it. So there's certain things that, like, just the nature of D&D, a bunch of stupid stuff will happen and we'll be like, all right, that doesn't need to go in there, but this does. And I'll choose those moments, but it takes me from start to finish, from the time I put pen to paper to the time I send it to my printer, I've gotten it down to about 3 months drawing it, lettering it, editing it, and printing it.
Wow. Wow. I've got to ask. I played one whole game of D&D when I was back in school a long time ago. And I wrote a story about it for the college newspaper. And I really wrote it very noncommittally. There were some people who said we should never allow D&D, and there were other people who said we should play D&D all day. And when that came out in the college paper, the two sides were they came. I wrote it not like I said not trying to say one way or the other, and they both came down. The side that was for it said you didn't do it strong enough. And then the other side, who was against it, said, you should have condemned it more, much more. You should have condemned it and told what a terrible thing it is. And but I did learn a couple of things. And so I've got to ask, as I understand D&D, there has to be a dungeon master.
Yes, that's me.
I was going to ask that. Are you the guy who sets everything up? Okay, so yeah. You are, in essence, the guy who sets up what's going to happen within the adventure.
Yep. I set the stage for everything they do. That's, you know, the fun part of it is really deciding the flow and what the story is. So when I created the initial idea for the game, I had a big mind, and I was like, okay, cool. All these cool things will happen. We can do this. We can do that. And I forgot that I don't really tell the story. I create the setting and the players create the story. And so I spent a lot of time on story-based elements that didn't matter. And I found out real quick that a lot of that work was just wasted. And it wasn't because they didn't like it. It was because when they play, you've got five individuals with individual goals trying to work together. And what that creates is a very unique story that you can't just direct. So being able to be a dungeon master is a unique hat, because you've got to be able to realize what your players like. So there's the element of keeping them engaged. How do you keep your players engaged? What are each of their individual goals in the game? Like when you're playing a video game, say I play, I'm trying to think of an open world game that I have multiple friends with. I'm playing this actual game right now with some of the same guys. It's called Grounded. And you can either go, you have to work as a team, and some guys need to go kill things to get materials to build things. You need a guy that builds stuff. And you can all do different things in the same game to achieve the same outcome. But everybody has a role. And so there's a guy that just loves to build stuff. He doesn't really care about killing anything. He just wants the materials to continue building things. So we go out and we kill stuff. How do we keep everybody engaged when they all don't want to do the same thing? So that's my job, is to create elements in the story that keep them engaged, because when they're engaged, they're creating good content. And when they create good content, the readers have something fun to read.
Wow. So are you guys doing this all in person together, or are you doing this on the computer? How do you do it?
We started 2019 all in person once a month. COVID happened and we went virtual. You know, one of my guys has really bad asthma, some health issues in there. So out of concern for that, we went total virtual, and we all live pretty far away from each other. So we went, you know, full virtual for a while. And then in the past year, we've done 3 games face-to-face. So most of the time it's on Roll20, which is a program online where we can host games. But we do try to at least get together every once in a while and maintain that camaraderie.
Is it easier if you are in person with each other, or is it easier if you're doing it digitally?
To be honest with you, it's so much easier digitally than it is in person, because with in person, I've got to get them to the house, and then we haven't seen each other in a month or two. And so we need to, you know, catch up, and then we need to eat, let's order food, or, you know, there's a lot of distractions when you're in person, and given there's distractions online as well. But what I've found is when they're online, they play for the 4 to 6 hours. There's minimal distractions. When we play in person, we have a lot more distractions and we spend more time kind of conversing than we do playing sometimes. So I mean, I'm good for either one. Either way makes me happy, but I feel like we're more productive when we're online.
Funny, I thought it would be the other way around, that if you're with them in person and you can see their reactions and stuff like that, that might be a little easier to write, but you're saying it's actually better just to go by what you see on the screen.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's because when they're at home and they're playing, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on and they separate themselves from like their family or these other things they have to do. And when we're in person, you know, so when you're separating yourself like that, you know, you just want to get to, you want to play the game, and then you've got to go take care of your kids. You've got to go do whatever else you're doing. But you're also able to just roll out of bed and play D&D versus getting up, getting dressed, you know, maybe grabbing some food on the way down. I couldn't tell you why they're better at it, but they just are. It's kind of unique.
Isn't that wild? I've never heard of this before. That's something. My 10 years of doing the podcast, I've never heard this. So I'm fascinated by all this. So, okay, so let's say we get past that and you get the script all together. How do you find the artist? Is that online you do that?
I'm the artist. I taught myself how to draw so I could do this book.
Oh, wow. Okay, because this is written by... Okay, so you said created by, if you're the writer and... okay, wow. Okay, and do you do the lettering as well?
Yep, taught myself how to do that too.
My goodness. Okay, so this is your baby pretty much. What don't you do in the comic? Maybe you should ask that way.
There's not much. I feel like... Well, when we started the project, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we still don't have a lot of money. And it's kind of hard for me to go to my wife and say, hey, I want to invest. You know, if a book is 30 pages and your average page rate is $100, and that's even on the nice side, right? Then you gotta invest $3,000 out of your pocket to get a book done. Well, that's not going to happen. So... I just decided I was going to start drawing, and you know, my wife is a phenomenal artist. I have artist friends in the family. My father's an artist, and so I just decided to just do it.
Wow.
I was like, well, I'll just teach myself how to draw, and I did. You know, I've come a long way, especially since issue 0 that I did, and I continue to grow. I think one of the coolest things that I've been told while I've been doing this project is the readers get to experience me leveling up my talent book to book, which,
wow.
That's, you know, it's really cool for me to be able to share that with people. And, you know, it's also nerve wracking sometimes because I, it's not like I have 10 years under my belt or schooling or all these things that I talk to people and they're like, oh, I went to school for this, or, you know, I've been drawing for this amount of time, I've done this and this, and people have all these stories, right? And my story is, I just wanted to make a comic book and I didn't have money, so I taught myself to do it. And, you know, I think that along the way, I've been able to hone a style that fits my title instead of having a title that fits my style. I've kind of learned to do things artistically that match what I think my book calls for. The further we get into the story, like, you know, I just really love the fact that I can draw a cat that talks and make it look like a character, not just, like a static cat on a page. there's a lot of unique stuff I've been able to experience teaching myself to draw for this. And then there's things that, like, I get challenged with too. My players challenge me a lot. usually when I'm in when we're playing a game, there's this moment where somebody says something they want to do, and I just put my head down, and you'll hear somebody go, oh man, we made him mad. And then somebody else is like, nope, he's trying to figure out how to draw this so he can put it in the book.
Do they give you, or, I mean, how do you get their likenesses? Do you take pictures of them and stuff like that, or how do you do that?
I have pictures. There's a couple of them where, you know, I also have to draw them in different places and, you know, different weights, because Boulder, when we started this, wasn't, you know, he's not the super jacked guy. And so trying to figure out what his face would look like slimmed down, and Spectre, I wanted to age him down just a little bit because he is younger than the rest of us. But drawing wise, when I was going in and initially drawing his face, I was getting too many lines because, you know, portrait work is really hard. And so I just sketched out different faces for everybody. And I will say Spectre's probably the hardest because he's very picky about how he looks. but, you know, there's always the room to grow with the characters. So, I'm blessed that I can call them and say, hey, I need a selfie. Can you just go take a picture of yourself doing this so I can figure out what this looks like? And they do.
Wow. I'm pretty impressed, because your drawing skills are, for somebody who's just, I have to learn how to do it myself, they're pretty good. You know, they're not George Perez, who's my favorite, very favorite artist, but I didn't expect it to be. But wow, you have really picked it up pretty good. I think both the writing and the art are quite good. Do you do the colors as well?
I will be in this book. I've been teaching myself coloring for the past couple of years. I've been coloring, like, just promotional work. I hired a colorist for the first 5 books because I had this. I wanted to be able to give people something that I was proud of. And especially if I'm going to ask people to go online and spend money, there's a piece of me that says, I want to be able to give 100% somewhere. And if I was to try and color and letter and draw everything, and I was in the learning processes, then something would take a hit. Like, I wouldn't be able to give my all in every category, if that makes sense. And I really just wanted to spend the first few books focusing on my line art and getting it as strong as I possibly could, and then learn to color after that. And so at the end of last book, I realized I had drawn 220 pages.
Wow.
And I've been doing comics for 2 years. Consistently, every single month, I had been, you know, I draw all the time. I've probably put more practice into drawing this comic than I ever did. And I was a professional musician. My band was, you know, signed on a record label that was owned by Sony Records. So, you know, I did like Warped Tour and stuff. And I probably put more time into drawing than I ever put into playing guitar. And that was my profession. So goodness. I said, I'm at a point where I was looking at my artwork, and things that I had been struggling on early on, I wasn't struggling with anymore. Not that I don't have room to grow. I feel like I always have room to grow, but I said, if I'm not struggling with these things that were really hard for me before, I think I'm at a point where I can try to color my own work, and then the reader will get 100% of me. And I looked at a few different coloring styles, and I found there's an artist that does some color cover work for me, Robert Nix. And he sent me some work he'd been doing on the side, and he sent me line art, and then he sent me, like, 20 minutes later, colored work. And I was like, how did you color this so fast? And he's like, well, I've been doing this for years. You know, this is my, he does it. He simply does artwork for a living. And he's like, so I know my art as I'm drawing it. I know how I'm going to color it. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, I like your style. Your process seems cool. Like, it seems like everything I want to learn how to do. Could I get with you and maybe learn from you? And so when he was coloring a book one day, he sent me the pages he was working on, and I just shadowed him. And I learned from him for a few hours, and I picked up some of his tricks, and I recorded it, and I went back, and I just kept practicing what he had sent me. And at the end of book five, I had some pages that I had drawn that I wasn't using. So I said, well, I'm going to practice on these. And I just spent, you know, a week or so trying different things. And I have a group of creators that I talked to. I sent the pages to them and I said, hey, what do you think of the colors? I didn't say who did it. I didn't say anything about it. I said, what do you think of this? And they were like, oh, is that from your next book? And I was like, no, no, these are just practice pages. And they're like, oh, why did you send practice pages to your colorist? And I was like, well, this isn't my colorist, it's me. And they're like, oh, it looks just like his work. It's really good. So when I got that feedback, I said, well, if they couldn't tell the difference between my work and the guy I'm paying, then I think I'm okay. And I was very direct. And I said, well, if I were to do this, do you feel like my work would take a hit? Am I sacrificing any quality for my reader? And they said, no, this looks great. And my wife is one of my biggest critics. She's a fantastic artist. And so when I told her I wanted to take on coloring, she was like, okay, well, get all your line work done. And then we'll work on that, because she knows lighting. She knows colors. She's great with color theory. And I just feel really confident. I'm really excited, actually, to be able to do it, because I feel like I'm opening up a new layer of myself to my readers. And I talk a lot about my relationship with my wife, because she's really the one that's helped me learn how to draw. I love telling the story about my first book, because I had spent 3 months drawing this issue zero that was not released. It was something that I'd worked on, and I showed it to her after 3 months. You know, I taught myself everything. I worked really hard and I did everything from line art straight up through lettering on this book. It was 18 pages long. We lay down one night and I hand my wife my tablet and I said, hey, can you read this? And I preface this that we were married for 4 years and she was my best friend for 11 years before we got married. So I felt really excited sharing something with not only my wife, but like someone who was my best friend and saw me through so many different creative ventures. And I also respect her as an artist. So she reads through this book and she'd pause the TV, you know, no expression the entire time, just going through, and doesn't make eye contact with me, hands the tablet back to me, turns the TV back on and says, it's okay. I was immediately crushed. I had a moment where I was like, well, I guess I'm not supposed to do this. I suck, so I just won't do it. And then the competitive side of me came in and I was like, well, I need to prove her wrong. So the next day I went out and, well, actually that entire night I looked up everything about digital comic creation, from what classes to take to what everybody was using for programs. Cause I drew it pretty much in a Samsung version of Paint. I didn't even use Photoshop or anything like that. It was the most bare bones, basic drawing program. And
I just sat there all night reading. The next day I went to Best Buy, I bought an iPad Pro with Procreate on it, and I came home and I started drawing. And, you know, so my answer to her giving me the lack of support was me spending $1,000 on an iPad. But she looked at me and said, is this something you really want to do? And I said, yeah, I really think that I want to bring this to life. And, you know, this woman had seen me when I was making music, and that was something I was very passionate about, was being able to create something. And she's like, well, you haven't had a creative outlet in a long time. I think it'll be good for you. And I asked her, instead of me drawing 20 pages and then going for feedback, I said, well, hey, how about every page I draw, I come to you and I get your feedback, so that way we can make a good book. Like, at the end, it'll be good, instead of having all this stuff done and then not having room for critiques. So every page I would go to her, and my ego had to go on the back burner, because for the first 4 books, every time I went to her, she would circle things, she would erase things. Pages that I spent a week trying to figure out how to draw, she would just erase things. And it hurt for a little while, mm-hmm. and it got frustrating here and there. But when I was done, I was so much more happy, and I felt so much more accomplished. And so I remember there's a specific page in issue 4 that I went to her and I said, hey, what do you think? And she said, I think you've reached the point where you don't need to show me your work anymore.
Wow.
And, you know, at that point, I think we had sold anywhere from issue 1, I actually sold quite a bit of, there was about 400 issues, issue 1 floating around. So I've sold a lot of books. I've gotten a lot of feedback. I've talked to a lot of people, but I think one of the best moments was when she said, you know, I don't think you need to show me your work. And
yeah, wow.
But she looks at it and there's no critiques. The last book, she critiqued an ankle. She said, the ankle looks like it's broken. You need to move it. Cause I drew somebody in a very action movement pose, and the foot was bent in a little way. And she's like, the ankle just looks a little busted. You need to fix that. And, it was a quick fix and I was done. And, you know, this book, I'm halfway through and I've shown her every page, and there's been no critiques. And, wow. As an artist, it feels good. As a person who looks up to her talent, I think that's been the biggest payoff.
Wow.
And I'm really excited to be able to take on coloring and for her to erase all my work again.
Can I tell you a quick story? It's funny to me. Do you know who Steve Ditko is?
Yes, I know Steve Ditko.
Steve Ditko, at one time in a comic he drew, he was always criticized for how he drew feet. And one time in a Spider-Man book, they're in an art gallery. And this guy, you can't see his face, his back is to us. He's looking at a painting of a foot. And the guy is thinking, boy, I wish I could draw feet like that. And when you're talking, that made me think of that. You know, because I don't think he ever was happy with how he drew feet. But it's so interesting that that whole situation came for you. I have to say, I'm amazed. I've never seen somebody who taught themselves how to draw and how to write and do all these things at the same time and do it really well. It has a little of an anime feel to it. I don't know if you're into anime or not.
There is a reason for that. My players and the guys who are the main guys in the book actually are more anime and manga fans than comic fans.
Wow.
And also, I'm sorry. I'll let you finish in just 1 second. I apologize. I get a little passionate. I'd really dive into everything that I do. And I'd noticed that in the grand scheme of sales and what the industry is, industry trends really lead more towards manga. And so I wanted to be able to appeal to those fans as well. But in a Western, you know, comic style.
Wow, that's amazing to me. I'm really shocked. You know, the funniest thing is that I we'll have to talk again when we actually get down and talk about the story. I'm usually a story guy, but the way you do this book is so unique and so interesting to me that we've spent kind of all our time talking about the creation of the book, which is great. I mean, you know, the fact that you do these things really and are able to take on all these different parts of the comic industry and do it. Some people are great writers, but they're terrible artists. Some people are great artists, but terrible writers. And some people do both, and they always say they want to be called a storyteller. And I have a feeling that's kind of the way that you're going to end up being. You're going to be a storyteller when all is said and done. You see the things working together well. And I'm just amazed at how you can make these things work pretty well. You know, I mean, like I said, it's not George Perez. I mean, I love George Perez, and he was the guy that I'm so grateful I was alive when he was drawing. But you do a really good job considering, you know, that you I didn't know that you had taught yourself. And I read the book and I thought this is very functional, very, you know, good storytelling going on. So I'm impressed, dog. That's really amazing.
Thank you. That means a lot. A lot, because like I said, I taught myself to do this, and I'm actually really hard on myself with things. And I did work really, really hard to produce something that I felt I was okay, you know, giving $5 for. In the world we live in, it takes a lot to ask someone to spend any money because we don't know what everyone's individual situation's like. Mm-hmm. And this is something that it's not like they're going out and buying a Spider-Man book and, you know, you've watched the movie or you grew up watching a cartoon or there's some kind of connection.
Right.
You're literally buying something because I'm telling you that I think it's cool and I've put this work into it and the choice is to support the story. And I really wanted people to understand that, hey, I wouldn't ask you to support it if I wasn't going to put everything I had into it.
Wow.
And hearing that those comments just make it so much, it's such a payoff as an individual who does put a lot of dedication and work into these things. So thank you.
Wow. I sometime we'll have to get back together and talk about the actual writing of the story and stuff like, cause I'm usually busy talking about the characters and the story and stuff, but the way you create this book is really just fascinating to me. But again, it's Crit Caffeinated Chaos, a D&D adventure story on Kickstarter. Again, it's gonna be funded, and you're already more than you got your goal. You need to get your goal by Friday, November 11 at 8:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. By then, it's gonna be Standard Time. And congrats on getting past the 1500. Congrats on. Do you know how many people would like to put together a comic like this? That is just an amazing. That is just something else. I just can't help but keep saying it, but I'm impressed. So if you wanted to find a really good book and support somebody who is coming up in the industry, again, go to this Kickstarter for Crit Caffeinated Chaos and support this amazing ability that Chris has to put a comic together. Boy, I wish I could do this stuff as good as you do. And I've been a comics fan for years. So please, you know, get in there and support this. We need to have more. You're already done. You're in the middle of your seventh issue. So that's just a sign of success. And at this point, all I can say is keep it up, man. You are doing wonderful stuff. And I expect it's only going to get better and better as you go along. So just keep doing it.
Thank you so much for the support. Okay. I plan on continuing no matter what, by the way. I'm very stubborn in that matter. And early on, my friends, when I put this out, there was a live stream we did, and one of the guys chimed in. They're like, you know, thank you for all the support. You know, we're sorry if Chris is really heavy handed with this, because when Chris wants to do something, it gets done. So even if you don't want to read it, he's still going to be making these books. And it's the truth, you know. I love what we do, and if I only make them for me, I'm happy. I think the greatest storytelling that we can do is one that we enjoy and we want to read. If there's anything I learned when I was in music, was that when you start making what was a passion project, if that becomes something where you're worried about the audience instead of what you want,
that's when it loses everything. You lose your initial audience. You lose the very like fibers that made it what it was. Mm-hmm. And so crit will always be something that we made and we enjoyed, and hopefully everyone else will enjoy it as well. There is truth in the matter of if one person can like it, 10 can. And that's just what I keep telling myself.
Well, I have to tell you, this is just an amazing success story to me. I haven't seen anything like this. So just keep going. I said, you are on the right track. If I, as a critic, can, I write reviews and stuff like that. So I'm used to reading and looking at stuff. Keep this up, because, man, this is really just impressive. And just thought, I can't say anything beside that word. It's just keep growing and keep telling more. You've got, in the comics industry, you've got a bright future as well as you do in music. So it's just great, Chris.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
The cover of Darkness, featuring thrilling artwork by the uncanny MJ Hiblin, is set in medieval Romania, where evil lurks under the cover of darkness. One family will be pushed to their absolute limits. They will face legendary monsters and encounter obstacles they never imagined existed. Werewolves, vampires, Frankenstein, and the mummy. When everything is on the line, simply surviving is not enough. Put away your pitchforks and get yourself a copy today.
It's always a pleasure to talk to George McHale, creator of such wonderful things as Resilient, which I still love. I just think that's such a great book that is. And also Cover of Darkness, which George right now has a Kickstarter going for the hardcover and card game. How's it going, George?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you. Let's see. The Kickstarter says it's a deluxe hardcover graphic novel collecting Cover of Darkness issues number 1-6 and our brand new monster-themed all-ages card game. And people always get on me because I don't do this soon enough, so I'll do it now and get it done. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Tuesday, November 8th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And so that's good. So all six issues are in the can now, George.
That's right, yeah. They were released in comic book stores across North America from Source Point Press. Issues 1-6 came out January through June. And now this is the collected hardcover edition of the book with a brand new cover, too.
Now, when is the book going to be available as far as, like, if people are looking forward to it? Because the ideal time would have been for Halloween, but, of course, obviously that's not going to happen right now. But when are you aiming for the book to be done?
Well, it really depends on printing, right? We have our fulfillment date by May, but that was really just giving us, like, a lot of time. But the books will be printed in China, through Source Point Press's connections. And I have a copy of their Cult of Dracula hardcover that they did, and it was a beautiful book, and this will be of similar quality.
Now, if I remember correctly, the folks from China send things over by boat. Are the actors printed and put together, are they going to send it by boat to us?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so that'll come. So we got all kinds of wonderful... These days we're having trouble with paper, and then we have trouble with shipping. And once it gets here, then you got to get it off the boat and get it to people for distribution. So there's all kinds of fun levels to get through. So it's great. Now, so the good news is the book's all done, so they can print as soon as you pay for it. Is that how this works?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the reason why we're wrapping up like early November is to try and get our print order in before Chinese New Year, because things kind of shut down over there for a while.
Okay. So there's some good things to do. How many pages are in the hardcover?
It's going to be about 160 pages with pinups and concept art that we're hoping to add to the book as well.
Oh boy, that'll be good. All kinds of wonderful, fun things to do. And it's all going to be really good to see how this all works out. So, like, what kind of extras are you going to have?
Yeah, so Cover of Darkness features a shared universe of horror characters. And so in every issue, you get a standalone monster origin story, but they're all connected to each other. The main story follows a family in medieval Romania that gets separated from each other, and they encounter vampires, werewolves, the mummy, creature from the Black Lagoon, and a steampunk Atlantean Frankenstein. And we've kind of done our own take on these classic horror characters, and in our version, the werewolves are Vikings. So you get five monster origin stories, and then the epic conclusion where everything comes together, and then we're at intending to include 10 pages of pinup art, which is like alternative covers and just beautiful pages that were created by artists like Carrie Nord, who worked on Daredevil and Conan the Barbarian, Ali Garza from Supergirl, Tim Laddie from Ninja Turtles. So we have some pinups, and then we also have concept art by our series artist MJ Hedlund. So you get to see his early designs of our monsters. And they're pretty fun too, because some of the designs we didn't go with. So you get to see like kind of like a peek behind the curtain and what was left on the drawing room floor.
I have to ask, did I hear you say that the werewolves are Vikings?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. I guess I didn't read that far into the series so far. How in the world are the Vikings werewolves? Or is that a big reveal we shouldn't talk about until people read the book?
So in every issue, there's a standalone monster origin story. In issue 5, we have our werewolf origin story. And it's pretty fun. You get to see how these Vikings became werewolves and where they go from there. Because in the beginning, we have vampires and werewolves kind of peppered in throughout the whole series. Like the werewolves make an appearance in issue 1, but you don't learn who they really are until the 5th issue.
Okay, that's new. I haven't heard that before. That's kind of a thing. So well, I got to read that so I can figure out how that happens, because I have never heard that before. And all my reading of monster lore and Vikings and things like that, I've never heard that. That's really interesting as far as that comes. So I got to ask a question, though, because when I first look at the Kickstarter page, there's a video, of course, with the woman who does the newscast, which I always enjoy. But the background image is like a werewolf with, it looks like it's vampire fangs.
He's just got his canine teeth and there's blood dripping down. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty fun image that's by our series artist, MJ Hivlin. And he does everything digitally with his finger. He doesn't use like a pencil or a stylus to create his artwork. So it's all with his finger, line art and colors. The guy's just a man possessed when he's drawing too. His finger never stops moving. It's pretty impressive to see.
So that's not a vampire.
No, that's our werewolf with the blood.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I was looking at it and I was going like, there's the two fangs from the top and two from the bottom. I was thinking, is this like a combination of a werewolf and a vampire? I didn't know what that was. So I was very intrigued by that. So, okay, that's kind of cool. Now, one of the things that I'm kind of intrigued by, and of course, I see more and more Kickstarters doing this kind of thing, is the card game. Do you want to talk a little bit about the card game? Because that's a new addition since the last time we talked.
Sure. So I've always loved games. My dad used to make games for me when I was like a little boy. And I've kind of continued that tradition with making games with my daughter and for my daughter. And so her and I sat down to make a game for Cover of Darkness, and we started off with like little cue cards, and we'd write down like what each card did. And the base of the game is this older game called Golf that I don't know if you're familiar with it, but no. Every player gets dealt with playing cards, four cards face down, and you're only allowed to look at the cards once, And then you try and make pairs when you draw cards or through people's discards. And if you make pairs, then your score goes down to zero. And that's the way golf is played, is you want to try and have the lowest possible score. And if you don't have pairs, then the number of that card counts against you. Okay. What we did is we took this classic game that we were finding was a lot of fun. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes to play. And it's a good party game because there's some kind of big moments of chance and of reveal, especially if you forget the cards that you have, which if you're, you know, if you're having like a house party and you're playing a card game, you know, maybe you're talking or you're having some drinks and you just end up forgetting what you have. And so there's like some big moments that are fun. What we did is we took the base of that game and we kind of reverse engineered it. We made it so that we expanded it. So you have six cards and you're trying to get the biggest monster army possible. And so every monster is assigned a score. And if you have pairs of them, then you get bonus points or three of a kind, four of a kind. But we also added in specialty cards. So like, for example, there's a gravedigger card where you can dig through the discard pile and find the card that you want. Or there's a goblin card where you can steal from one of your friends. And there's even death cards. Well, that'll hurt you. And it's a fun game. We've been playing it for over a year now, just friends and family kind of testing it out. And the cards are tarot card size. So they're a little bit bigger. So you get more kind of cool monster art on each page, or on each card rather. And it's being put together by Source Point Games, and they have a game division that, so it's going to be like a professional quality produced game.
Well, that's cool, because I see more and more Kickstarters starting to add games to, you know, if you have a comic or collector's edition, they're starting to offer games as well. And it certainly seems to be a thing. I wish I had time for games. All I can do is admire them. I just never have the time. I'm just too busy. You know, they say sometimes if you create stuff, you just don't have the time to actually. It's like comic readers and comic people. People who create comics rarely have time to read other comics. So it's, I guess, the gaming and stuff like that. So this Source Point Press, they have a gaming division that you worked with to create this?
Yes, that's right.
So how did that go? What did you do? Did you have a basic concept and they went from there? Or did they help you develop the concept? How did that work?
No, I had the game fully put together. And I worked with Dave Lentz, who is a letterer and graphic designer with Source Point Press. He does like all of Garrett Gunn's books, like The Good Boy and Unicorns. And so I worked with him on the design. And then the guys from Source Point Press, specifically Lex Leon, designed like the game box and is doing the graphic design for the rule sheet and stuff. But basically, I took them a finished product.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because I talked to Garrett recently about Good Boy and some of his other projects. I didn't know that he was involved with the gaming as well.
Garrett's part of Source Point Press and the gaming division there. It's all kind of connected.
I see him at conventions. I understand he goes to plenty of them. So I guess he takes like the middle of the week to work on the games and stuff like that, sounds like.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know how much he's involved with the game specifically. I think he handles kind of more the comic book exclusive covers for comic book stores. And that's kind of his department. But he's moved to Michigan and is based out of Michigan, working at Source Point Press now.
Oh, cool. Michigan's a good place to have lots to do inside, especially in the winter. Because I went to school there for a year, and let me tell you, the snow was often up to my waist. As you know, I walked between buildings and stuff, and we used to go through buildings to get warm breaks on the way to classes and stuff. And it would literally be up to my waist, and you know, the day after I graduated from school, I was on a plane to California to get out of there. I don't have nothing to do with all that cold anymore. I was like, I guess that's why I live in Florida these days, because I like the warm stuff. But anyway, I thought I'd read a quick thing that was on the Kickstarter page about the game. It says, cunning and luck of the draw are necessary to win this original game that requires players to build their ultimate monster army. Utilizing memory and set collection mechanisms, this all-ages card game for 2 to 4 players is quick to learn and fun to replay it again and again. So, all ages, do you find that younger kids like to play this game as well?
Yes. Yeah, I've played with kids as young as like 6 years old, and they get the hang of it, and yeah, you can play it as a family.
So I guess they have to be monster fans, I would imagine.
Yeah, but all kids kind of like monsters. That's one thing I say at like conventions, like when someone's walking by my table, I'll be like, hey, do you like monsters? And then sometimes people will be like, well, doesn't everybody? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's just kind of a trick question to get you to hang out and talk with me.
So, how do you get, is the game like a separate level? Is that what you, if to order, is like an add-on, or how do you get the game?
Yeah, so we have only 4 tiers on this Kickstarter. So tier 1 is about $10 US, and it's just the PDF of the graphic novel. Tier 2, $22 is for the card game just by itself. And then tier 3 is $40 US for the hardcover graphic novel. And the last tier, you get the hardcover graphic novel and the card game for $55.
Okay, wow. So that's good. That's a pretty good. Now, as we're talking, and of course, we're recording a little earlier, you haven't quite gotten your goal of $3,650 US dollars, but you're standing on the bridge looking right into it. So as we're talking, you got 63 backers, which is a good number to have so far. How many Kickstarters have you done so far?
This is my 3rd Kickstarter that I've ran personally.
How's this one gone compared to the others?
It started off with a bang, so that was nice. Like, we were halfway funded in like the first hour, and right now it's about 5 days later, and we're 85% funded. So, yeah, we're getting there. I feel pretty confident that we're going to get it. I'm really hoping to get a bit more over the kind of minimum, so that we can hit some of those stretch goals.
Okay, what stretch goals do you have?
We have 10 pages of concept art added to the hardcover. So you get to see kind of a behind the scenes. MJ Hivlin, our series artist, designing the characters. And some of those character designs we didn't actually go with. So that's always kind of neat to me to see. And then we also have a stretch goal of pinup art. 10 pages of that added to the hardcover. So you have art by Carrie Nord, who worked on Conan the Barbarian and Wonder Woman, Ali Garza from Supergirl, and Tim Laddie from Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters. So we have some kind of guest artist contributing some pinup artwork to the hardcover as well.
Okay, right. Now, you and I once before talked, and you had along Chris Cam with you, who also worked on this too. We talked early in the process. How did things go as far as like the whole telling the whole story together as working as a team?
Yeah, it was good. You know, we did a lot of planning before we started writing the book. And so we had our poster boards and our post-it notes, and we mapped out every character's journey, not only plot wise, but also like emotionally, like what was their kind of story arcs going to be. And we mapped that out over 18 issues, because this is the start of a longer story that we're telling. And so we had a roadmap. So we knew what we were doing, and that really helped before kind of diving into it together. And then we kind of have different characters that we write. And then the other person will kind of write the second or third draft and kind of just make everything cohesive within the story.
So this is the beginning of a longer story. I'm just sort of curious. Do you know about how long of a story this is?
We have it planned out for about 18 issues. So wow. This is the first 6 issues collected into the hardcover. And next year in November, the sequel series will start coming out into comic book stores.
Okay, so, November. Okay, because, see, this kind of thing I always think ought to come out around Halloween. Because a good horror story, although horror really goes any time of the year, to be honest with you. But I always think that they would sell better around Halloween. If you could get it together and get it out before Halloween, it'd be kind of cool. Now, when you say next November, is this the collected edition, or are you talking about the individual issues?
The individual issues will start coming out November 2023 for our sequel series. But up next in the Cover of Darkness world, we do have a one-shot that's coming out into comic book stores November 23rd of this year. It's called Cover of Darkness Origins, and it features three standalone monster origin stories. We have a vampire, the origin story of our older vampire. His name is Orlok, and he is an elf warrior that rides a dragon, protects the elf kingdom, and he has a dying niece, the queen, and it's up to him to try and look for a cure for her. Let's say it doesn't go very well. We also have the origin story of our Bride of Frankenstein character in our version. Her name is Mary Frankenstein, and she is the most brilliant inventor in all of Atlantis. And so you get to see how she becomes a monster as well. And then the third story is ninjas versus kaiju. So you have three short stories in comic book stores this November.
And those are all on the Cover of Darkness universe.
That's right, yeah.
Wow. How many pages?
22.
Okay, 22. So they're shorter stories, but that's good. And it comes to Source Point Press. Have they solicited that yet?
Yes, it's been solicited already, but okay. I believe you can still order it.
Okay. That's not one of the add-ons for this Kickstarter, is it?
No, we don't have any add-ons. Maybe we should add it on. That's actually a really good idea.
Because I'm thinking that would be something people might go for, because, you know, everybody wants to have the complete story. And if they could get that, that might help them, you know, do those kinds of things. But anyway, how I look at it. I always like to, when I get things, I want to get the whole thing so I can sit down and dive headlong into the story. So that's pretty cool. So is this going to be, is this the same team working on this one shot?
No. So on the one shot, Chris and I aren't writing together. We're writing our own story separately. And in this one shot, we have Andy Belanger, who's previously worked on Swamp Thing, and he has his own series, Mother Trucker, that's doing pretty well in the independent world. And GMB Kamichuk, who's an artist who's worked on the graphic novel for Baby Metal. And then John Delaney, from Justice League, Adventures in the DC Universe, Simpsons, and Futurama for Bongo Comics. He's illustrating one of the short stories as well.
So is this the first of a series of one-shots, or is this the only one-shot you have in mind for now?
No, we have three one-shots coming out. So the other two will come out in the spring. And we have legendary creator Regs Morales is going to be doing a short story for us, you know, of Identity Crisis fame.
Yeah, he's really good. That's right, he did Identity Crisis. He did some other stuff too. Somehow I always associate him with Hawkman.
Yes.
But he's really good as far as that. So that's great. How do you get these people? I mean, are these like online that you come across them, or do you track them down? If it's somebody you like, you try to seek them out and ask them if they do it.
So when I started working with MJ Hiblin, it was through online. It was one of my first books I had ever done, and I didn't have anything out yet. And so I tracked him down through Instagram. He has like 250,000 followers on Instagram. And I thought he'd be a great fit for the subject matter. Most of the artists that I'm working with on newer projects I've met in person and gotten to know. I actually Nat Jones, who's previously worked on Spawn and Death Dealer, he's doing one of the short stories with us too, and he's a fantastic talent, and I've met him many times at conventions, and so you get to kind of know these guys, and then, you know, they're a little bit more interested in working with you if they know you and you know, they've seen you around a while.
I always say that conventions, and this was when the pandemic hit and people couldn't go to conventions, a lot of this kind of stuff stopped. We went to MegaCon. Richard Rivera is the creator of Stabity Bunny, and he and I went to MegaCon, and we ran into people we hadn't seen for over a year. And we kind of figured that everybody would have moved on. You know, they had all this time to do other stuff with other people. And instead, we found several other people going, oh, we haven't seen you. We need to get back to doing stuff together. And we were like, oh, cool. Because, you know, like we said, we thought everybody would figure, well, that's old news. Go on and do other stuff. But this is why I'm glad conventions are back, because I think a lot of people don't understand when they go to conventions that not only are there things happening in front of the table, but there's stuff happening behind the table as well. So that's good. What was the last convention you were to?
The last one I was at was FanX Salt Lake City in September.
Oh, okay. Wow. So it's been a little while. Do you have other cons that you're going to do in the future?
Yes, I am actually taking a break right now. I did 15 conventions in about 30 weeks.
Wow.
From like kind of spring to September. And so I'm taking a break. I'm actually working on a documentary that I won a grant from a local cable provider here to make a kind of like a reality TV show. So I'm working on that right now. But starting in February, I think I'll be at Fan Expo Vancouver.
Well, you keep busy. Documentary. Did I hear you say the documentary is about is reality TV? Is that what it's about?
It's about, it's called Nerds on the Run. And it's kind of about how geeky pop culture stuff gets made.
Okay. Okay. Cause that's something people don't really understand. So that's a good thing to do. Because, you know, especially now, because, you know, I remember not that long ago that, you know, superheroes and stuff like that never could be seen on not only the small screen, but the large screen. And then all of a sudden, all this explosion of stuff happened. And particularly like when Avengers came out, people wanted to go to theater just to say they saw them in live action and stuff like that. So it's cool that you're doing that, because I don't think people understand that that's a process. Is there like a project you follow from concept through end? Is that how the documentary goes?
No, we're going to an animation studio and meeting with them and talking to them about how to get into animation. We're going to the filming location of the very first Rambo movie. So First Blood, that was made in Hope, British Columbia, just down the road from where I live. And so we go there for the 40th anniversary and interview some of the actors, and they have a tank running down Main Street, crushing cars. And we got up in a helicopter, and then we're going to a film school, Vancouver Film School, and we're hoping to go to a video game company and learn about how video games are made. And then we're planning on visiting Hatley Castle, which is the filming location for Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, as seen in the X-Men movies.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is going to be pretty comprehensive. Do you know about how long the documentary is going to be?
We're aiming for 22 minutes.
Wow, all that in 22 minutes?
Yeah, no, it's going to be snappy and kind of fun to watch.
Wow, okay, so that's wild stuff, because a lot of the documentaries and stuff, that and I'm starting to really enjoy them. The people from Star Trek Deep Space Nine did a glorious documentary that to this day is one of my all-time favorite documentaries. And it's interesting to see how people now are not only interested in seeing the film, but they want to see the background information on it too. So I think you're doing a perfect thing in a great time for that, because I think there's a lot of interest about how things are made. So that's great. How did you come up with the concept of doing this?
I've been sitting on this idea for a while, and wanted to do it, but I was really nervous about kind of putting my own money into making a television project. And my wife saw this application for grants from a cable provider up here in Canada. And she's like, you should apply for this. And so myself and I'm working with Andrew Buckley, who's a novelist, and the two of us are putting the thing together.
Okay, well, that sounds great. So is it only going to be on the place that gave you the grant, or are other stations and stuff going to be able, like Netflix or something like that? Are we going to be able to see it in other places?
Well, so the goal is to kind of create a pilot with this grant money, and then we own the rights to the footage that we've made, to the show that we've made. So then we will shop it around, and hopefully we can get picked up and have a series.
Oh, so you want to do a series of these?
Yeah, kind of like Comic Book Men meets like a travel show.
Okay.
So we'd go, you know, city to city and kind of see the what's kind of cool and nerdy in that city.
Oh, that'd be cool, because I have to be honest with you, Comic Book Men never really resonated with me, because these people would walk in apparently out of nowhere with Jack Kirby artwork. And I'd be saying, no, that then people don't just walk into a store with artwork like that. So I always kind of felt that was a little hokey. But if it's something that's actually talking about realistic things, I think that's got a lot more realistic stuff to have happen. I'd be love to see that.
If you follow me on social media, on Instagram, it's at Comic Book George. You can follow along on all my different projects, and that way you can kind of keep up to date with what's going on with them.
So that's the only social media you're on?
My Facebook is George McHale, so you can look me up there. And then if you go to my website, it's just georgemchale.com. There's links to my Facebook, my Instagram, and then my YouTube channels as well.
If you could spell McHale, because I don't know. Every time I hear that, I think of McHale's Navy, and it's not spelled like that. So why don't you let people know how to spell it so they can find you?
Sure. So just go to georgemchale.com, GEORGEMICHAIL.com.
Okay, that'd be good. So back to the Kickstarter. Once again, I'm going to say the project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Tuesday, November 8th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, that's important, I think, people should know. Of course, I wouldn't wait until get close to that, because I know too many people who have said, oh, I meant to get on to that Kickstarter, but I never got to it, and I got distracted, and then the Kickstarter ended. Then they missed the chance to get all the good stuff out of it. So don't wait until then. After you get done listening to this interview, I'd highly recommend that you go and support. And again, it's called Cover of Darkness Hardcover and Card Game. And so you want to take a look at, read it, and check it out. There's a fun video that I, like I mentioned, about a newscaster. And who does that for you? Because I've seen this on your other projects too. Who puts those videos together for you?
Oh, I hired a lady off of a website called Fiverr to film the kind of newsroom thing for us. And then I just got an animation of a book flipping and kind of I edited it together, and there you go.
So is this the only place you can get the card game right now?
Yes. This is the first time the card game is being released. So it's pretty exciting stuff, because I've always wanted to have a game. And I'm really looking forward to just the idea of the game being in people's homes and being a part of their lives, you know, because, you know, a comic book, a graphic novel, that's something that's kind of more personal, and you read it and you enjoy it. But a card game is something that you share with your friends and your family, and you kind of make memories around a game. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It's interesting you say that, because so many times comic books are what they call a solitary function. You don't sit there and read to each other or something. You sit down with the comic and you read it, and you kind of, as Frank Miller once said when he read this first Batman story, he opened up the book and he fell in. And to me, that was kind of the way I was when I started, and I'm still that way. You know, I sit and read comics, and I don't necessarily you know, it's not a group thing. I mean, I've had some times where I've gotten together with people and we all sit around and read comics, but it's not us talking or something. Unless we get done, we're all done at our break point and we talk about the books. It's nice to share those kinds of things, but it's pretty much of a you do it by yourself kind of a thing. And that's, you get too many of those kind of functions and you spend a lot of time alone. So you're right, gaming is a good thing, a good way to meet other people and to get around and to socialize a lot more.
Yeah, and one thing that's nice about this game is it only takes about 15 minutes to play. So you normally, like if we're just playing the card game, we'll play it like 3 or 4 times in a sitting and kind of, you know, add up the scores at the end of it. But you can also play it like people who are like really into games, they'll have like a big game night and it'll go hours and hours and hours. And sometimes you like a smaller game to kind of break things up, you know? So you've played, you know, Pandemic for an hour, and then you're going to play, you know, the Cover of Darkness card game for like 15 minutes. And then, you know, you'll break out another hour long game, you know, just to kind of mix things up. And it's a good one for that too.
Cause I've seen some games that take like days to play, and, I just never, you know, I don't have the time for that. I think these shorter games would be better for me because I don't have to, you know, there's some people play all night and then to the next day and stuff like that. I like these briefer, more concentrated games like that. So it's more appealing to me than these forever games that go on. So that's cool. I'm just curious. Why did you develop a shorter game? Did you think that would have more appeal than the longer ones?
Well, this golf game that we were playing that it's based off of was kind of our game of choice for a while there. Just, you know, we'd be having a party and it'd be like, all right, you guys want to play this? And it's just kind of, you know, and no one's really too adverse to playing it because it's like, okay, it's, you know, it's a fun game. And, you know, it's not like where you're breaking out Risk and you're going to have like enemies for life with betrayals and things like this. It's a game where you can kind of still socialize and you can still, you know, have a party and still be interacting with each other. So this was our kind of go-to game. And so that's what I based it off of was something that was fun to play, but that a lot of people would be into.
I used to play Risk with this one guy who was very quiet, and he would sit there and you wouldn't notice, and everybody else would be, you know, shooting the breeze at each other and saying, oh no, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to take over your continent, stuff like that. And he would sit there very quietly and very slowly he would take over the whole world, and at the end of the game he would win. And we decided we better pay attention to him next time we did it. We kind of went after him, and he was kind of mad because, you know, normally he liked to stay in the shadows, and he didn't get to do it the next game. So that was kind of funny to see.
We were playing this game of Risk years ago, and friends of ours were playing. It was a husband and wife, and they had made an alliance. And when the husband betrayed the alliance, as the game gets on, eventually you have to do that, right? Well, mm-hmm. She was so mad at him, they left. They left in a huff. It was pretty funny, actually.
Oh my goodness, because that's the thing about game playing. You got to be really careful how you do it, because the game sometimes goes on after the game gets done. But it sounds like if you play shorter games like yours, if you have a game where you're kind of upset, if you play it again, maybe next time it'll be different and you'll come away a little less unhappy with how the game went.
Yeah, and well, with this one, because it's kind of depending on your own memory, it's mostly you betraying yourself because you've forgotten what you were supposed to do. And yeah, so it kind of makes it fun like that.
So how many pieces of art are there? How many different cards are in Cover of Darkness, the game?
There's 70 cards.
Okay. So, and the same artist. Yeah. Obviously there's that one that I was looking at, the werewolf with the long teeth is one of the cards.
Yeah. So there's 40 monster cards, and then there's 30 specialty cards, which allow you to, you know, kind of do special things. Like, and there's also cards like ally cards and weapon cards, which will just give you bonuses. And there's even death cards or attack cards, which will hurt you. But we also have resurrection cards and like a healer card as well. So there's ways you're never truly out of it. And so it makes it fun because you don't want to just like, oh, I got this card and now I'm, you know, I'm screwed. I'm not going to win. So then, you know, it sucks the fun out of it. We didn't want that. So there's always a way to kind of avoid damages. Yeah, it's a game that requires some skill in that you're depending on your memory to make these matches and to avoid different things. But there's also luck involved, which I think is, you know, the best games. It's not all luck and it's not all skill.
Well, that's great. So that'll be good. Maybe someday you'll actually get them like in game stores and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been talking with Sourcepoint Games about the possibility of that. And we will see. We'll see where that goes. I'll see how this Kickstarter does and how the demo of the game works.
Because the comic shop that I go to, she has a gaming section. And that's where we discovered Werewolf by Night, which is a pretty good game. And, you know, it'd be fun to have your game in there and give people a chance to play it.
Absolutely.
Because there was a store that I went to. I won't say where. I don't want to embarrass anybody, but there was a more and more stores are having gaming areas where people can play games and stuff like that. But the guy in charge, he wouldn't sell any snacks or anything like that. And I said to him, "You're crazy. These people are sitting here all day, and they're going to get hungry eventually, or thirsty, and they have to go out of your store and go someplace and give their money to somebody else." In fact, one of the stores I know, they actually shut down because they used to be open on a day. And the only thing that ever happened in that day was people playing games, and they didn't make any money because they didn't buy anything. So they stopped doing that on that day. So people had to go find another place to play the games, stuff like that. So it's interesting how, you know, stores are always looking for that other extra thing that will add extra income to what they're doing, so they don't only have to sell comics. And gaming is one that they often do. And I've seen people sell paperback novels, computer software, you name it. They're always looking for that something else. There's one store I went to, and I like to tell this story about. There was a store that they had window tinting and women's shoes as well as comics there.
That's an odd combination.
Everybody, something for everybody. Women could buy shoes. Fathers could get their windows tinted, and the kids could buy comics. And I was like, I came in, I looked around, and I went, "What is this world? This is something very different." So,
well, and oftentimes comic book stores will be partnered with like sports cards and hockey memorabilia up here in Canada. And it's like, there's not a lot of crossover between the guys that are going in there to buy comics and the guys that are going in there to buy hockey cards. But oftentimes they're together.
That's right. As long as they get to stay open and keep going and selling stuff and making a living, that's fine. It's interesting because where I grew up, there were a lot of baseball cards. People used to take it and bounce them off off a building, and whoever could bounce it off the building and keep it close to the building would win that hand. And so I was never very good at that game. So
I played that game too when I was a kid.
How'd you do?
I wasn't bad. Yeah, we played for keeps. But the thing is like, you're supposed to like value these cards, and then they'd all be banged up from you throwing them against the wall.
That was the part I could never get. If you wanted to value these things and save them, and some of them ended up being worth big money, we were banging them against the wall of a building, and I was always like, I don't think this is a smart idea. But when you're kids, who knows? I mean, you don't care about those kinds of things when you're kids. Imagine somebody taking your Cover of Darkness cards and bouncing them off a building. That wouldn't be very good for those kids. As far as like the artwork and stuff like that, do you sell the artwork from the cards, or are the cards are the place to basically get the artwork?
Well, the artwork on the cards is in the comic book series. So it's used from there. It's, you know, it's splash pages, it's covers and pinups from the comic book series.
I'm sorry. You don't sound like posters and stuff like that.
At a convention, I might have some posters with me, but, not online right now.
Okay. Well, you know, hey, whatever works the best and stuff like that. It's important to do those things. Have you ever been at a convention with your artist? Because so many times people who make comic books have never been in the same physical room together. Have you been with that person in like a room at one time?
No. So MJ Hiblin lives in the UK, and I've never met him in person. Actually, I've only ever talked to him like on a Zoom call once. And we've been working together for 4 years. And,
wow.
Yeah, and that was about a year ago. So 3 years ago, it was just email, and then we did a Zoom call together, and I had him on my YouTube channel show, Inside Comics, and interviewed him about making comic books.
Sometime you'll have to do an add-on, you know, send George to the UK so we can meet his artist.
Yeah, I'd love to.
That'd be fun to do that, me, all those kinds of things. Because I don't, there are, like the comic that I worked on, Stabby Bunny, the writer lives in Florida. The artist that lives in the first series lived up in in Tennessee, and then the colorist lived in the Philippines. I don't know if we're ever going to get all those people all in one place at one time, but it's kind of interesting to see that happen. So other projects you're working on, obviously you've got all this good thing. This is going to keep you busy until the stuff ends on November 8th. Are there other things that you're developing right now?
Well, I've got the documentary. I have my series, Fire Engine Red, which is illustrated by Ali Garza. And the rights reverted back to me on that one just this year. I had sold it to a comic book publisher that went under. And so the rights have reverted back to me. So I'm looking to finish that series up. It'll be a 4-issue miniseries. And so that'll be coming in the future, but probably not next year, maybe 2024.
Source Point Press, have any interest in that?
I haven't talked to them about it yet.
Okay, all right, so we'll have to see how that goes. All right, so it's Kickstarter again. It's Cover of Darkness, hardcover and card game. It'll be funded if it reaches its goal by Tuesday, November 8th, 3:00 in the afternoon Eastern Time. And we're standing on the precipice of being able to get this done right now. It's a goal of $3,650, more than 60 backers, and I'm sure that this will happen. And we'll get to see more of this stuff, good stuff in the future. So all I can tell you is, George, keep up the wonderful stuff because it's great fun. I'm glad to see you branching out into gaming and other things like that. So all I can say is, you know, keep the good things coming because I think people are going to enjoy them.
Thank you so much, Wayne. Yeah, I love doing this stuff. And I'm glad that conventions are back and I can get out and meet people and sell my books in person, too.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.